Well, welcome to this Rockford Symphony Orchestra podcast. I'm Steve Larson, music director of the Rockford Symphony, and I have a very singular guest with me today, a member of the orchestra in a section that, he is the section. There is only one tuba player in the orchestra, and Matthew Gaunt is it. Welcome, Matthew.
Hello.
Can you tell us something about what it's like being the only person on the stage with your instrument?
It's a lot of fun. It's the kind of thing where it's a neat role because some of the time you are functioning as a solo instrument, but often it is more collaborative. Well, even though I'm the only one, I'm usually kind of power teamed with the bass trombone and often with the bass section at the same time. So it's kind of a more of a unique color that we're adding, but not so much of a solo role like the harp, per se.
Right. You mentioned power team. You don't hear that said very much about cellos and violas, for instance. But tuba is certainly, it is a large instrument. I don't know if it's the heaviest instrument in the orchestra. Maybe double basses are heavier than tubas, except for maybe the real big tubas.
Yeah, the tubas that I play are about 35 pounds each, so I don't know what a bass weighs.
But still, it's enough that that you probably are happy to be sitting down while you're playing.
Yes.
Now, there are, I think, two types of brass players. There are brass players who have really gotten off on playing in marching bands, and those who couldn't stand it. Which one are you?
I'm a reformed marching band addict. In high school, I was really into the whole marching band drum corps thing. Mm-hmm. And then when I was about 15, I heard the Boston Symphony live for the first time. Uh-huh. And that kind of immediately made me jump the fence towards classical music on stage instead of...
Okay. Now, when you played in the marching bands, were you playing the sousaphone, the instrument that sort of wraps around your body, the traditional marching band instrument?
I did both sousaphone and the marching contra, but it looks like a concert tuba, but you stick it up on your shoulder.
Yeah.
Our high school actually splurged and bought a new fleet of those.
Oh, okay.
And I kind of got in a lot of trouble because the first week that we had them, I broke two of them.
Okay. That was an invention of drum corps, the drum and bugle corps. They invented the marching tuba.
Right.
That way that rests on your shoulder rather than wraps around you like the sousaphone.
Exactly, exactly.
How did you get started in this?
It's kind of funny. Since you can't see, for the audience to know, I'm pretty short. I'm about 5'6". And when I started playing tuba in sixth grade, I was not very tall. And part of it, the reason that I started doing it was a dare.
Okay, and I have to interject here and say our former tuba player, who I'm sorry to say died a few years ago, was huge. He was 6'7" and weighed upwards of 400 pounds. And so, I mean, the instrument actually looks sort of dainty in his hands. But, and once we did a little sight gag at a youth concert, I had him come up to the front of the orchestra, and Michelle Lekas, our concertmaster, who's very, very petite, very tiny, I had them switch instruments and ask whether that, you know, they'd be each suited for each other's instruments. And of course, the answer was no. But you are living proof that you don't have to be an ex-football player or something, a very big person to play the tuba. But what does it take to play the tuba?
Pretty much anybody can do it. It's a matter of practicing and kind of finding ways to hide your air if you're a small person. Mm-hmm. I've been lucky enough to play second tuba to Gene Picorni in the Chicago Symphony a number of times, and he has literally twice the lung capacity that I do.
Yeah.
So it means by the math that I can either play as loud as he can and breathe twice as often, or play the same length of phrase and, did I say that right? Yeah, I can play as loud as he can and breathe twice as often, or I can play the same length at half the volume.
Yeah.
So for those of us that have smaller lung capacities, it's just the simple thing where you just have to breathe more often and find a way to try to hide your breaths.
And this is something that when you start playing in grade school or middle school or something, your band director doesn't hook you up to a breath of, volume machine to see if you're suited to this.
Right. It's, yeah, you often don't know when you're beginners how someone's going to grow or not.
Yeah.
And actually, middle school band parts are the worst written things for the tuba. Because they're they're like footballs after footballs. You play for half a page before your next breath mark. And they're kind of almost impossible to do them as marked. So especially when you're younger and only have a couple liters of air, you have to breathe almost every bar at that point.
So you started on tuba?
I started on piano.
On piano, okay.
And I was always, I like to play pop tunes from that were on the radio at the time. And I found myself always being more interested in what the bass line was doing than what the melody was doing. So when it came time to pick a band instrument, I was leaning towards a bass instrument, and then all my friends dared me to play tuba because it was bigger than I was at the time. And but those two things kind of led me that way.
I was kind of curious about that, because some people end up on tuba because, the band needs one, and they're the biggest kid, and so the band director figures that they'd be the person best suited to to pick up the tuba.
Yeah.
But how old were you when this started?
I started piano in fourth grade, and then added tuba in sixth grade.
Okay.
I hate to admit it, but I played clarinet for 1 month before playing tuba, but then I came to my senses.
That's something to be ashamed of, I'm sure. we won't talk about that when we talk to our clarinet section. Anyway, so what happened? I mean, a lot of people, I think probably most people, well, let's back up a little bit. We talked about there being one tuba in the orchestra as opposed to, 24, 26, 28 violins or something like that. The odds of getting a job are much smaller being a tuba player. So at some point, if you decide, I like music as a career, I want to be a tubist, you have to sort of take stock of the situation and say, really, what are my chances? And how did this happen with you?
For me, I decided, I remember hearing the Empire Brass Quintet when I was about 15, 16 years old, and hearing Sam Blafing play with them and decided that's what I want to do. And then the same summer is when I started listening to Boston Symphony concerts. And at that point, if I could set up my life so I either played in a brass quintet or an orchestra or both, then I would feel like I hit the lottery.
Yeah.
And so it was a matter of I was lucky. I had really good teachers, but teachers that also spelled out the reality of that, which is basically your chances are about the same as winning a gold medal in the Olympics. Mm-hmm. So if you want this, you have to work that hard for as someone that wants to be the gold medalist in figure skating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's kind of a matter of then being prepared for what opportunities may arise, and also being prepared for there are some times we can go 3 years without an audition for a full-time orchestra spot.
So. Yeah, besides the fact that there aren't that many openings available, it's also, in terms of the instrument of the orchestra, with maybe the exception of the harp, the one that's called for the least in orchestrations, because you were the last brass instrument added to the orchestra, the tuba,
right.
Historically. Tubas didn't occur until the mid-19th century.
Right, so we miss all Mozart, Beethoven, there's so much great music that we don't get to play.
They never knew what a tuba was, how unfortunate
yes.
they are. So are you interested in any of the tuba's predecessors, the serpent,
the serpent and Offa Clyde. I've actually played Offa Clyde on stage, mm-hmm. and I hope to not have to do that again.
Well, it's Offa Clyde, of course, is his name. It's often called the Awful Clyde
yes.
for that reason. There's a good reason why the tuba replaced it.
Yes. So some things do go extinct for a good reason. Yes.
Can you describe what it's like to play the instrument?
The Offa Clyde?
Yeah.
It's an Offa Clyde kind of looks like a brass version of a bassoon. It's keyed more like a bassoon, but uses a small tuba mouthpiece. And it feels awful to play. It's really stuffy. Every note kind of comes out a different color, color of sound. And it kind of sounds like a dying cow.
Oh, what a wonderful... Wonderful. So there's a good reason it's in the back of the orchestra. Then.
Yes.
So maybe some
yes.
of this will come through. How about Serpent? Have you ever
I've messed around with a SERP and I haven't played it on stage. Again, it's even in some ways harder to play. The notes don't want to center. You kind of, if you can imagine what it would feel like to try to blow into a brick, that's about what it feels like to play a SERP.
Yeah, it's a good thing they're gone. Now, you have, people who are listening to this can't see this, but you have two tubas that are here. How many tubas do you own, and why do you own so many tubas?
I actually need to admit that I belong to Tuba Buyers Anonymous. I have a problem. I only own about three tubas right now, but I often will buy one, sell another one off, and kind of have a bunch. I think the most I've owned at one point was probably close to a dozen, but I've probably had between 50 and 100 come through at different times.
My goodness. Just the adventure of having them, or what's the difference between...
Compared to other brass instruments, we have a bigger array of sizes and shapes that aren't really standard. If you look at a B-flat trumpet or a trombone, a tenor trombone, they all pretty much look the same brand to brand. And for us, there's a really wide variety of shapes and sizes. And so some of it is purely based on sound. Sometimes the sound that we hear where we're playing is really different than what you hear out in the hall, and trying to find a good balance of that. My favorite tubas to play that I like the way they sound usually don't project that well, and the ones that everyone else likes the best out in the hall are the least pleasing where I am. So I'm kind of in a constant search for that happy middle ground there. For years, I did a lot of touring and needed a smaller instrument, trying to find a smaller instrument that sounded big enough, but yet would fit with airline restrictions. So it's kind of a different, playing with different people and different acoustics kind of presents different solutions in terms of the right instrument there.
Well, Matthew, if you wouldn't mind, could you do a little demonstration of, just tell us, show us what a tuba is, what a tuba can do, what's a tuba for, is the joke in there. Play a little bit.
Sure. Everybody's used to hearing the kind of lines that we would play like in a Sousa march, a typical oompah bass line. Everybody's heard things like that, but we can play melodic music just as well as any other instrument. Often wonder, you know, what the sound would be like if we actually got rid of the instrument. In other words, what does it sound like just our lips buzzing the way that we do? So I'll actually do something on the mouthpieces to show what that would sound like. So it's not a very attractive sound, but by the time you put that through the tuba, it changes quite a bit.
No, but I think it's important that people realize that you don't make music just by blowing into it and pressing valves down. You've got to be able to, you have to produce the pitches with your lip, and you have to know what they are, where they're going to be next, and that's what takes the time.
Yes, exactly. And getting used to all the physical sensations of that. Especially with the mouthpiece that to a lot of people looks like it's the size of a shot glass or a coffee cup. It's kind of getting your whole face in there, and the way your face vibrates kind of takes a while to get used to, especially if I go for really low notes. I'll work my way down, and then we'll also do one of those on the mouthpiece so you can hear what that would sound like. And on the mouthpiece, it sounds kind of disturbing. So you're really just kind of shaking your face around, your lips around as loosely as you can to get out those low notes.
Yeah, that last sound you heard, it may not be apparent just by listening, but that was no mouthpiece. That was just flapping the lips. That's interesting. And while you're playing, we're in a well, not a very small room, but this room is small enough that the walls are shaking. You know, there's a lot of sound energy that comes out of that, that instrument. Another reason that there's only one tuba in the orchestra is because just you make as much sound as several other instruments put together.
Right, which it's funny because from our perspective, it's actually an instrument that's hard to hear yourself on. Usually you hear the people, especially the bass trombone and the trombone section, with their bells pointing a bit towards the floor, they get a bounce off there, and you hear them really loudly, and with our bell facing away from us and over our head and pointed towards the ceiling, that's often very far away. We actually don't hear ourselves that well. And especially depending on the acoustic, you often are kind of trying to figure out, am I playing loud enough? Because I can't hear myself at all. So it's kind of
We've had situations in orchestra pits where the tuba player actually couldn't play under the lip of the stage because the length of the sound waves were such that the sound just wouldn't happen.
Right.
It just was just wouldn't come out.
Exactly.
Really interesting phenomenon.
Exactly.
Now we see in terms of varieties of tubas. Tubas in F, tubas in E flat, tubas in C, tubas in B flat. But yet, as a conductor, when you open the score and look, it just says tuba.
Right.
So, you know, what's the story with these tubas and all these different keys?
Yeah, there's we have a bit of a lack of standardization there. Often people will use a higher pitched tuba like F or E flat for works like Berlioz, things that are higher in pitch, or maybe want a little bit narrower, more focused sound, and then the C tuba or the B flat tuba for bigger pieces. Some of it is different depending on where in the world you are. In Germany, they almost always use F tuba for everything unless it's Wagner, and then they'll pick up the big B flat tuba. Here, people tend to use what they like more. And in the last 20 years, it's got even more confusing because you can have a high-pitched tuba like F that should be small, where the instrument is actually bigger than a C tuba. They've made so much overlap in the keys and the sizes that now you can kind of play any key tuba, and it might even look like something else.
Really? Because that would be, I would have to think of the tubing just by the pitch would have to be several, like 4 feet shorter or something.
Yes.
Like that.
Yeah. Exactly.
For the it's just bigger.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's curious. And looking over there, you have four valves. You have four piston valves on that tuba, and you got four rotary valves on that tuba.
Yes, each of these tubas, these are both tubas that are pitched in C. They sound very similar. One has the piston valves that go up and down like a trumpet valve. The other one is the rotary valve that turns and rotates more like a French horn valve. Different players prefer the sound or feel or action of different ones. That you can argue with a lot of people about which one is supposedly better.
Yeah, I can imagine. Why are there four valves? There are three valves in the trumpet, so why are there four valves?
Well, so it's hard to see. Actually, both of these tubas each have five valves.
Okay.
This piston valve horn has a fifth rotary valve underneath the four valve stack.
Okay.
And so with our instrument, we play so much in below the end of the trumpet low register, where the trumpet ends on a low, I think it's F sharp, and then the pedal tone B flat, there's a big gap there. We often play chromatically all the way down to the fundamental pedal tone. So the extra valves give us enough options for getting all the half steps there, as well as, especially in the low range, using different fingerings to compensate for pitch inadequacies. Mm-hmm. So the fourth valve is set up to be like a 1 and 3 combination on a trumpet, which then extends you down another fourth. And then the fifth valve is basically like a flat first valve. So to help with sharp pitches, you can use that interchangeably.
Yeah, because you can't throw out a slide like you do because I think you can. I've seen tuba players that have a slide that they move.
Yeah, so we have slides that move. Sometimes you can move the main slide. Sometimes they're hooked up to each valve. Some of it depends on the ergonomics of the horn. On this piston valve horn, it's kind of hard to get around to where the slides are in the front and top of the instrument. On the other horn, the rotary valve horn, is more of a gap underneath the top bow, so you can actually stick your arm through to reach the valve slides on that one.
Okay. What is the What is the repertoire that a tuba player, either general or specific, you look forward to playing? It really pumps you up to be playing this particular piece or this particular composer, or you sort of dread playing, either because it's difficult or because it's not well written or whatever.
I'll start with the dread side. Probably the least favorite piece for most tuba players to play is Dvorak New World Symphony.
And I know why this is. Yeah.
There's we only play in the slow movement, and we play the chorale at the beginning and the chorale at the end. Each one is 7 notes long. Yeah. So you...
what was he thinking?
Yes, I'm not sure if that was punishment for someone or how that came into being, but... To it's such great music, and you wish you could play along with it. I know a couple people that have come up with justifications for an alternate part that sometimes gets played, where you play more with the trombones and get some more to do that way. But if you play the original orchestration, you know, you sit through a couple of movements of not playing. Favorites, almost anything by Prokofiev has a great tuba part. You kind of get to really get into the meat and potatoes of what the instrument can do, as well as some nice little solo passages here. A lot of the works by Mahler also have really great parts. Berlioz is usually very active, kind of in the other way, in the upper register of the instrument, but you kind of get a good amount of activity there.
It's one of the very few pieces with two tubas, too.
Right, exactly.
Something fantastique.
For most of us, we were so into the sound that almost anything we get to play, we enjoy doing.
Mm-hmm. Do you look forward to Oktoberfest every year?
I used to. I think I may have burned out on it at this point.
Do you play with brass ensembles, any degree of frequency? I do
a fair amount of quintet playing with a couple different quintets. There's also a large brass ensemble called Burning River Brass. It's based out of Cleveland, but pulls people from all over the country. That is one of the few American professional large brass ensembles. I've been playing with them for about 15 years now, so we still get together a couple times a year.
Hmm.
It's a really neat thing to play chamber music on a brass instrument, because then we kind of get to be as active as the cellos would be in the orchestra.
So right.
You get
it's
to
a lot more to play.
And be a lot more involved instead of counting as many rests that way.
What do you think is what would you point to that some aspect of tuba playing that you think would surprise most people?
I think most people would be surprised that the type of air that it takes. Everybody has this idea that you have to blow really hard on the tuba, you know, because it takes so much air. And it takes a ton of air, but it's a really kind of wide, slow-moving air, almost like if you went in winter to fog up the mirror of your car or fog up your bathroom mirror. You're exhaling a lot of wide, slow air as opposed to blowing fast, pressurized air. The instrument just won't respond if you blow
hard. I think if people look at the back of an orchestra, they can see a really good example in almost any concert. The trumpet players will be turning red. And the tuba player will never be turning red.
Right.
They'll be maybe breathing a lot. But,
yeah, exactly.
But there isn't the pressure that's involved with the high notes that the trumpet does.
And yeah, if you just hand some random person a tuba and ask them to try it, they usually try to blow really hard, and it just doesn't work that way.
Yeah. Do you teach?
I do teach. I used to teach everything from beginners through college students. Now, all of my teaching is just at the college level. I teach up at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee and also at the Vanderbilt College of Music in downtown Chicago.
Mm-hmm. What do you look for in a student, a tuba student? That they come in, you size them up, you listen to them play. What is it that you look for that you think they've... No, this one's got potential.
The main thing that I've noticed is interest. If they're genuinely interested in doing it, they're probably going to do fine. I've had fifth graders start that were really small people. The first fifth grader I started came in for his first lesson, and we handed him a small student tuba. And by the end of the lesson, he was in tears, and I was trying to figure out what was going on. And then his mom, you know, got out of him that he wanted to play the really big tuba, and he pointed over to the biggest tuba they had in the band room, and he felt like he was being cheated because he had this little small tuba. So he actually turned into a really fine player. And it's mostly a matter of interest. That whatever physicality issues there are, people can overcome if they're interested in.
There are very few women that play tuba. What is this just a matter of the size thing that it's seen as a big instrument, therefore it's a man's instrument?
I think there's some of that still today. There are more and more women players. The principal tuba player in the Philadelphia Orchestra is a woman, and she's not large.
She's not very big.
She's not very big. Sometimes I think that often in the low brass row, there's the stereotype of kind of like the knucklehead, goofball, low brass players, and that stereotype is kind of there for a reason. And I think that often girls kind of don't want to put up with that.
They have too much sense for
it. Yeah, they're a little more evolved, so they don't really want to put up with that.
There are stereotypes about the brass section.
But at this point, I'd say half of my students are women.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of has evened out a bit.
That's interesting. Well, Matthew, thank you very much for taking time before our rehearsal today to talk about the tuba on our podcast. Really appreciate your presence in the orchestra. I've enjoyed having you as a member of the orchestra. And we'll see you very soon.
Thanks. My pleasure.